Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Eric Wong. Eric, please tell us where you are in the world and what you do for a living.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on here and I'm looking forward to our conversation. So,
likewise.
I'm calling in from LA, born and raised. I'm very happy to be here right now. Very sunny, finally. It's been feeling like the PNW the past couple of months, just kind of rain, which is very unusual here. But yeah, so right now I'm kind of have my hands in a few things, but you know, my day job is actually in finance and private equity. But, you know, at night, if you will, or when I'm not working in that job, I'm running a yerba mate brand called Yate. So started it with two of my, you know, best friends that we met in Shanghai at the time, and a little bit more on that later. But yeah, so I'll pause there and hand it over to you.
Sure. That's awesome. And a lot of the folks who come on the podcast, kind of similar stories, you know, kind of the beginning stages of a brand, still working full time. So I think it's a really, you know, valuable thing to hear about from other folks who are doing the same thing. And what are you kind of thinking as far as, you know, obviously you say you're doing this kind of at night, like just outside of your normal working hours, but is this something that you're looking to get into more full time? You're looking for ways to kind of, you know, transition into this as a full-time gig?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have a lot of listeners who are also in CPG or perhaps even running other startups as well. I think particularly for CPG, it takes a long time to warrant it being a full-time job for many reasons, right? Mm-hmm. For budgetary reasons, for traction and so on and so on. You know, there's also the other side of the argument, like why not just jump in with 2 feet and just go right at it? I've actually learned from that before. So actually this is my second beverage startup. What got me into beverage in the first place is actually going back to the whole Shanghai point of our story is I actually started a hard seltzer brand while I was living in Shanghai. Jumped with both feet in, quit my job, you know, didn't pay myself a salary for 2 years. And it was hard, like, you know, to say the least, right? I think that's an understatement. And I think it probably would have done us more if we just actually slowed down, and we were able to fund the business through our salaries and whatnot. I mean, that probably could have helped a little bit. I mean, I can touch more on a little bit later, but I think eventually there just wasn't product market fit. But I think the point of me bringing that up was, I think I learned just kind of extending the runway as long as possible. And I think you're seeing that with the current funding environment, that it's good that we're not so cash dependent right now on outside funding.
No, it's so true. It's one of the biggest pain points I hear from, you know, people on the podcast and other conversations I have with entrepreneurs. And I ask, like, you know, like, what's like your number one thing that you're like, you know, is like worrying you about the brand right now? And like so many people say, it's just funding, it's funding, it's funding. And yeah. I will say, yeah, yes, we do have a lot of CPG business owners come on the podcast, but also as listeners. And you know, a lot of their stories are 3, 4, 5, 6, even up to 8 to 10 years sometimes of just product development in doing it full time. So
that's, I think if you could take that's good. I mean, I think, yeah. Like, and sorry to interject there. It's like,
no, you're good.
A lot of times as founders, I think across all sectors and industries, but as founders, you want to go as fast as possible. Right. And like, but I think it could really behoove all of us if like, just be slow and methodical about it. And that's kind of the approach we've taken so far with Yate.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. Cause I mean, you just need the time to get enough feedback, you know, just see what's going on out in the market with who you're selling to, what they have to say about it, and just kind of really take your time. And like you said, like build that long runway to be able to really like ensure that you do have product market fit when you do decide to go 2 feet in and, you know, do a really big launch or maybe step into some other verticals. So, but on that side of things, I'm curious, as you're selling it right now, I see you obviously sell it online. You're in, it seems like a ton of stores. So are you doing most of the revenue that comes from the company right now is from those retail deals that you're doing, or is most of it from the direct to consumer sales from the website?
This is usually the case for beverage. Online is really tough, right? It's the margin just sometimes doesn't work out, especially at our stage. Logistics cost is really high. There's a commission that you pay off to, you know, someone like an Amazon or another e-commerce marketplace. That being said, it's a great way to acquire customers. And it's really just more of a marketing tool, really. But most of our business, which is not unique to us, is actually through wholesale offline. I will say though, what is distinct about us and where we've had a lot of success relative to other sort of beverage brands or healthy beverage brands is we've actually had quite a bit of success in this channel called on-premise. So for those of you that aren't familiar, you know, offline is typically the offline channels are typically bifurcated into off-premise and on-premise. So off-premise is more like your supermarkets, your liquor stores, convenience stores. They call it off-premise because you're buying it and consuming it off-premise. And then on-premise is more like, you know, your bars, restaurants, music venues, nightlife, et cetera, because you're consuming it there, right? And so we've done pretty well for ourselves in the latter because of our brand positioning and our product positioning. We kind of want to be like, you know, for lack of a better term, because there's really no other competitor in this space, an alternative to Red Bull, right? So if you think about when you're going out at night, when you're at a bar, what is like the only caffeinated option? It's usually Red Bull, right? And they've dominated that space for the last several decades. And so we kind of want to carve a little space for us. We're not directly competing with Red Bull, if you will, or we want to be careful not to say that. But, you know, we want to be a healthier alternative, a plant-based alternative to Red Bull in this space. And there's actually a lot of historical context there too that I'm happy to go into, but hopefully that gives you more insight into how we're doing from a channel perspective.
It's interesting. So you're looking there are in more like kind of food service sectors than you are off-prem selling in liquor stores and grocery stores.
Yeah, well, you need both, right? And it's like even... Like, for example, someone like Red Bull, you know, a lot of people know Red Bull from a vodka Red Bull, right? Like just going out where they get a lot of their brand awareness. But like still, I think a vast, don't quote me on this, but like 80% of their sales is still off-premise, right? So for us, we see it as a good way to get our foot in the door because there's just less competition, right? Like you go to a Whole Foods cooler, there's what feels like now thousands of brands. Whereas like on a bar menu, there's really not much competition, right? And so it's a good way for us to get started. It's a good way for us to build brand awareness. And then, you know, customers can go home and purchase at supermarkets when they see us. But I guess what's unique about us is that we do get to live in both of those channels, and not many healthy beverage brands get to do that.
No, it's so true. I think most usually take on like, you know, one of the two of like the niches in the, you know, wholesale vertical. And then most of the other channels come from, you know, the Amazons and the online selling, whether it's e-com or in a marketplace. So really interesting that you've been able to carve out a position in both, actually. It is,
Yeah. And a lot of our backgrounds is in alcohol. So Mike, one of my co-founders, spent a lot of time at AB InBev. Galen actually was a consultant for AB. So we understand alcohol really well. We just didn't want to do alcohol anymore, right?
Right.
Yeah. And what's really fun is we actually get to do a lot of the same alcohol strategies without the limitations, right? Because as you know, alcohol, there's a lot of limitations just given the nature of the product, but we get to do things like what a spirit brand or a beer brand would do in terms of marketing. We get to live in the bar, we get to live in nightlife, and that's really fun for us.
That's awesome. So in the on-prem vertical, I mean, are you predominantly like in bars and restaurants, doing more like coffee shops, hotels? What's kind of your biggest driver in the on-prem space?
Yeah, like if a quick scan at our Instagram or our website can show you that we're very, let's say, social or nightlife forward, right? And so we actually live a lot in nightlife. That's actually where we got our start. Like we started in underground raves and warehouse parties in LA as an alternative to Red Bull. And this was really just listening to consumers and promoters. Like people were asking for an alternative, right? That was natural and plant-based that still gave them energy. And that didn't make them feel like shitty afterwards or gave them a crash, right? So yeah, that in terms of even just brand focus, like we're not going to turn down restaurants, we're not going to turn down bars, but where we really want to win is music forward venues. So live music venues, concert halls, anywhere that's playing loud music that people need energy to dance or move around.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And do you ever work with any of these places? Like when you say they have a behind the bar, like do you ever work with them to say, like, here's an example of like a drink you can make, it's kind of like an alternative to a Red Bull, and maybe have like the name forward and like a specific cocktail like that. I would imagine like if this was my brand, like think about myself, like I feel like that's something I would try to do. But is that something you've ever done with any of the, you know, clubs and stuff that you're,
yeah,
you should say clubs, I mean, like nightlife places? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We try our best not to reinvent the wheel wherever we can, to the extent that we can, right? And like there is a bar advocacy program that is tried and true for a lot of spirit brands or beer brands that are entering on-premise. And so similarly, we have to do the same thing. And what that means is like, we need to basically partner with bartenders, bar managers, and work out programs with them, whether that's in the form of creating cocktails or specials or promos. So what is great about Yate is that it drinks great alone, but it actually works really great as a mixer. And that's very intentional. So we haven't touched too much on the product yet, but like a lot of the formulation, we designed it so that it would mix really well. So it really honestly mixes well with most spirits. But, you know, since we're an LA brand and we focus a lot here in SoCal, we push a mezcal and tequila a lot as a pairing for Yate.
Yeah, I can see that. And yeah, I wanted to ask you more because I see it's obviously carbonated, which is obviously, you know, one of the best things to have as a mixer for almost any, you know, type of alcohol you're going to mix it with. But, and then even in the flavors, I mean, I can kind of see they're very, you know, kind of like cocktail-y forward. I could definitely see that. So what kind of, I mean, obviously with your background doing hard seltzers, but what was kind of your like ultimate decision to, you know, really kind of make this, you know, more of like an alcohol mixer forward than maybe, you know, something that would exist in like a bodega or like, you know,
Yeah,
like a retail shop or something like that.
I mean, people may hate this answer, or maybe investors might hate this because they might find it too much of a niche. But honestly, we like me and my two co-founders, we love to go out and have a good time. Like, admittedly, we like to party. But like, you know, when we would be out, we realized there's only Red Bull, right? And we just saw that Red Bull had such a stronghold on this occasion, right? Like vodka Red Bulls, like that's it. But it's also ironic because you start to see, I don't know how old you are or the listeners, but like you get to a certain point where you don't want to order vodka Red Bull anymore, and now you're
Yeah.
seeing people order like espresso martinis. Like, what does that tell you? It tells you that people still need energy. Like, they need caffeine when they're going out, right? Like, it takes a lot of energy, or it's like the end of your day, and like you need energy to socialize. And so we wanted to just kind of own this space of like social energy, right? And like, we actually trademarked the word social energy in this category. So we actually own that word. And that's, you know, sort
Nice.
of, yeah, it's sort of this thing that we want to own. And like, you can think of all the extensions that can live off of that. But really, I guess back to your question is like, we realized that there was such a gap in this channel and in this occasion specifically. And so hence why the focus of like living in on-prem and having it work also as a mixer.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. And I mean, I think any kind of more marketing forward person would actually quite like that answer because, you know, it's that like the age old adage with in marketing, which is like if you try to you'll message everybody, you basically will message to
Oh
nobody.
yeah.
You know what I
Yeah.
mean? So like being more like I think defined and more niche in this way, especially as a newer and upcoming brand, is actually a really good move in my opinion. And I think a lot of marketing folks would agree with you to that point because I think one of the biggest mistakes that people make, you know, especially in younger brands, is like, you know, it may even be true that your product is good for everybody, doesn't have allergens, anybody can enjoy this and drink this, or no matter what it is, if it's food or whatever it is, clothing, anything. That may be true, but you know, when you start to try to appeal to every single person that exists in the world, you know, you end up really appealing to nobody's like real like for the personal side of anybody, and you put yourself in competition with basically, you know, the big players that have the money to appeal to everybody, like
You
your Red
actually,
Bulls do, you know what I mean?
you took the words out of my mouth. Actually, I was just gonna make that point. It's like
Yeah.
trying to build everybody is like big company marketing strategy because you have the dollars and the channels to amplify really quickly across a lot of people. But because we have limited dollars, we have limited resources. Like, if we try to appeal to everybody, we're spreading our resources too thin. And so we just really just focus on our little tribe or our community, if you will. And it's like people we know, like personally, like this, we are the tribe, right? Like, we are the users ourselves. And they always say, like, don't make a product for yourself, but we're in this occasion enough, right, to know like what people need, and we've been listening. And so this is where we kind of want to start. It's like, it is so music focused for us, you know, so focused on this channel that we almost to some extent don't even care about, let's say, fitness or workout occasion, right? So historically, a lot of energy drinks kind of own that space, the most notably Celsius, right? And so
Right.
like, they've completely owned that space and they're doing an incredible job. And like, we don't want anything really to do with that, right? Now, that doesn't mean like someone who's working out doesn't want to consume us, right? It happens all the time, but you know, that's not something where we want to focus our time and effort.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I mean, I can see, you know, sticking in, you know, this lane. I mean, you know, being in these kind of very music forward nightlife, you know, places, you know, I think that opens up all kinds of interesting possibilities for partnerships. Like people who are actually performing at the venues, I mean, they get thirsty too. Where are they going to go? They're going to go to the bar, maybe ask for something. So, you know, I think it opens up a lot of really interesting possibilities to like kind of go down that road even further. And then I think if you can really anchor yourself in these kinds of, you know, cultural niches, I think that's really like it could be a great stepping off point into like a more general consumer base rather than you know, just because you're focusing on, you know, something like this more specifically. I don't think it closes the opportunities for all types of people from all types of, you know, situations using it or enjoying it. But I think it's good to have a niche, especially in the beginning as a jumping off point for sure.
You keep saying like words that come up in my head. But like, yeah, like we're focusing on our bullseye customer right now, and that's our cultural niche. But like, there's, you know, ancillary or secondary or tertiary customers that can grow from that. But like, I want to focus on this, on the point of it being a Grimante has already been used in nightlife, particularly in Europe. So for people who like to listen to techno and electronic music, if you go out in Germany, these clubs are already selling Grimante, right? So that's really cool. It actually kind of already exists in New York for a little bit as well too. But these venues, you know, people are drinking Grimante to stay up and dance. So again, what we're doing is just trying to like commercialize and amplify this cultural niche that already exists. So like, just going back to the point, like, we're not reinventing the wheel, right? Like, we're just just bringing it to the masses, if you will, or more people, maybe not the masses yet, but yeah, I think just focusing on this cultural niche has been really, really helpful for us so far.
Yeah, no, I could definitely say that. I think it's a really great perspective. And by the way, we need more yerba mate in bars in New York. It is, if I ever saw a cocktail that said like the mixture ingredient was yerba mate, I guarantee you I would have ordered at least two or three of them. I have never seen that, honestly.
Well, shameless plug. I know you're in Upper East, but we're mostly in Brooklyn. So,
okay.
Yeah, Public Records, Silo. Superior ingredients. So a lot of these nightlife places, definitely check our store locator. But I would definitely, those three are worth checking out if you're going to see music. We're on the menu, so make sure to get us.
I definitely will. I might just go just for the drink because I love yerba mate tea. I got into it when I was in college. It's honestly the only place I've even seen it sold. Maybe I just don't notice because I don't really actively look for it too much. But yeah, it used to be one of like the biggest things in like our little coffee shops around our campus. And I said, oh, okay, let me try this one day. I saw like caffeine content. I was like, okay, I get down with this. Like, yeah, this is actually like this is a pretty good amount of caffeine, and I didn't crash. I didn't feel terrible with all the sugar of the Red Bulls and the Monsters that are out there, and I didn't feel like, you know, it was too much caffeine. It was just like a perfect like experience for me as a student, staying up really late nights, going out late nights. I used to have cases of them in my place. So I love yerba mate. I don't think it's really out there in the market enough to be utilized in like other like unique ways like this, like as a mixer. So yeah, I think it's going to be a really cool and upcoming space, you know, for you.
So on that point, actually, like it is still a niche, actually, like yerba mate, the category itself. So we're almost playing a niche within a niche, right?
Yeah.
So we get to live in like, we kind of live in a lot of different categories, if you will, like functional beverage, energy, and yerba mate and RTD tea. But yerba mate itself is still pretty small. I think last I checked, it's like a $2 billion category in the US, which sounds big, but it's really not when you think of big CPG. And it's really just dominated by one player, Guayaki. So the big yellow can.
That was the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So they've been the incumbent brand for the last 25 years.
Yeah.
They've almost gotten like the Kleenex treatment because so on their can, you'll notice it says yerba mate really big. So people actually think yerba mate is a brand and not an ingredient. So anyways, actually, we're stoked about them. We're glad they've existed because at least in, you know, particularly the coastal areas, they've helped educate yerba mate for people. And that we're hoping to ride off the education, which is great. And we just want to carve out our own little space within that category.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest things I find in like the communities of like CPG niches, like we're, you know, talking about with yerba mate, is, you know, there's so much more space for growth in the category as a whole that it doesn't seem like, you know, like different growing businesses, even like the big players, like in say like relatively big, like, you know, the largest players in these niches, like Guayaki is, it seems like there's kind of this general consensus and respect and like, you know, support between like brands, even in the exact making like a very similar product, to kind of just raise the category as a whole. And I think it's a really fun space to be in. Everybody's kind of on the same page of like, you know, anybody's, you know, further visibility to the public is going to be good for every brand that exists. There's a lot of, you know, areas in CPG where that's not the case. And it's just a, you know, shark grab, like it's very, very competitive, and that's just the way that it is. But and something like this, I think, is very unique in that, yeah, I mean, any visibility for, you know, the ingredient and the, you know, the concept of it as a whole, I think it's going to be good for everyone in the space. So
it's still so nascent, right? And like, you know, what is the phrase, the rising tide raises all ships. So we're kind of almost doing like, using the Red Bull example again, but like we're kind of doing like the Monster strategy, right? Like we're okay being number two, or we aspire to be number two, right? Maybe we'll be one day, right? Number one, but we're aspiring to be number two right now. Like we want to be next to them. You know, we have a very stark brand difference, right? Like you put our can next to theirs, it's like we're black, they're bright yellow. You know, their branding is very wellness driven. It's kind of granola, like, you know, it's all about saving the rainforest, which is great. Like we love the rainforest too, right? But we're more focused on like, you know, trying to save the dance floor and like having fun and promoting like, you know, the social occasion.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I think it's another thing I think some folks can lose sight of is, you know, it's not like not everybody is looking for the most health conscious and like, you know, supporting. So like all the time, it's like, you know, like other brand messaging is good too. I think people try to just like have that as like a thing, no matter what their actual messaging is sometimes. And I think it can come off almost a little bit like gratuitous sometimes. It's just like, oh, you're sustainable. Like it's two ingredients. Like, of course it's sustainable. Like there's not really many unsustainable ways to get these ingredients. Like, and I think it could kind of It just like comes off as just a bland thing. It's like, oh, it's sustainable, but like, but also like the rest of our branding has nothing to do with that. It's like, okay, just kind of throwing that out there. So, I
Yeah.
think like this kind of fun branding with, like you say, like saving the dance floor. And what was the thing you said you had a trademark? I like that. It was
Oh, social energy.
social energy. Yeah, like I think that people love that, and that's like, if you can get them to think about that when they think about the brand, like that's perfect. Like, and of course with Guayaki, yeah, like I didn't even know that they were like this kind of like rain, like saving rainforest for it. I didn't
Yeah.
even know that, when I used to buy it. But yeah, no, I think it can be a breath of fresh air for people to not just be like,
Well,
have it
look.
like thrown in their face with all the.
Yeah, an inspiration for, I'm sure, a lot of brands and founders, but Liquid Death, like we're thankful for that, right? That we're thankful that kind of authentic and get to be irreverent and get to be different, unconventional. And that's kind of what we want to do too. Healthy doesn't have to be about wellness all the time and yoga and whatnot. And I'm almost like repeating the same things that Mike Cesario from Liquid Death used to say about water, right? So yeah, we feel very much in that same vein. And then also if you look just like at energy as a whole, like I mentioned, it's always been like function driven. So what I mean is like 5-hour energy came out to like for people to go to work, like or drive a truck, long distance, right? Like Red Bull's like to go do action sports. Like that's their whole branding. They own F1, they own like extreme sports and all this stuff. And then there's like the Monsters and the rock stars of the world of I don't know what they own, like angry people.
I feel like they're more like X cross type sports. Like
Yeah,
they're really big into
motocross.
like BMX and things like that. Same,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not to disparage anybody, but there's like almost memes about people who drink Monster and Rockstar, right?
Oh,
Like,
no, for sure. Yeah,
right.
for sure.
And then, like Celsius, like I said, that like owns, they just have done such an incredible job dominating the fitness space. But everything's always about like drink this energy product to go do this thing, right? And like for us, it's like, what if I just want to have a good time? And that actually lends itself well to a trend that you're probably seeing is like people are really cutting back on their alcohol consumption, right? But they still want something to drink, right? So ethanol brewing and all these non-alc beverages are great, and I drink them too, but they don't really make me feel anything, right? It just tastes like alcohol, which is great, but I kind of want to feel something. And I think having yerba mate, something that kind of drinks like alcohol, drinks like a beer, but actually gives me a sort of buzz, right, from the energy, is really cool alternative to getting drunk.
No, it's so true. And a lot of the alcohol alternatives just tend to be like the zero alcohol whiskey. It's like, why? Like it's
Yeah.
like I drink like I, the taste of some people enjoy the taste of whiskey, but I think it's like it goes in tandem with the drinking part of it and the alcohol part of it. It's like,
Well, it never even tastes like the real thing, so I'd rather just not have it. At least that's just me. But that's why I think Athletic Brewing is so good, because it's probably one of the best tasting non-alc beers. But yeah, to your point, like it's just like I want to feel something, and I think we're seeing too when we talk to especially young people when they're out. Like, it doesn't mean people are going out less; they just don't want to feel shitty the next day.
Especially post-COVID, obviously, like everybody knows, the substance abuse was a huge issue, and I think there's this huge rebound from a lot of alcoholism going on during the pandemic times, especially some of the worst places are where you and I both are in California and New York. Had some of the most dense populations, so needed the most stringent regulations during that time, so it lasted a lot longer than maybe some other places, and so some of those issues end up being the worst. And I think now you're seeing a lot of rebounding of people looking for alternatives. Yeah, no, for sure. And that definitely makes sense. So let me ask you this though, one question I always like to ask, have you ever seen any of my podcasts on the channel? It's a question I ask everyone. So obviously, you're still working full-time. You're still obviously having success with this business though as well. So you've surely learned a lot since the inception of the brand, doing your first sales and everything you've learned, like kind of since the inception. And if you could go back and give yourself one piece of advice, business, personal, whatever it might be, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
Man, I could give myself so many things. There's so many mistakes and lessons learned. But I think if I had to pick one, it would be just trying to do things yourself. I've said this before, but like I think it's very easy for people to like reach out and think there's like a service provider, consultant, an advisor who's going to solve all your problems. But especially at the very, very early stages of doing, a startup, really across any industry, is like kind of have to know how to do it yourself, right, first. And like whether that's like doing your first social media post, whether that's talking to a distributor or going into an account and selling your product. So I think like building that muscle and doing it yourself first, so that then you can maybe delegate and hand it over to somebody else. But I would say like there's no silver bullets, I guess. So like just do it yourself, build up that muscle, and then hopefully you get to a point where you can hand it over.
Yeah, I think those are two really good points. And I think, hearing that as an entrepreneur, maybe listening to the pod, I think that can really resonate with people because I actually heard an analogy of, outsourcing too much too soon in a startup. And the analogy basically was outsourcing your marketing and your sales enablement and all these like big aspects that like you could do yourself, but you either don't want to, or you don't feel equipped to, or don't want to spend the time to figure it out. It's almost like, when you were growing up in school, taking your math classes, and they made you like do everything by hand first, and then allowed you to use the calculator to do all the stuff you already learned. And at the time, it was like, it's kind of silly, but if you don't understand like the long way to do it and like the right way to do it, when you go and like use something like a consultant or an advisor or something, that's still like, it's a give and take. You're never just like handing a piece of your business over to somebody to take total control of. You never look at it again. So, being able to like know how to do it on your own, even a little bit, can help you advise your advisors and at least like speak that language a little bit to be able to, have things done in the way that you want, even if you're outsourcing some part of that.
They also
So,
don't have skin in the game, or they usually don't, or if they do,
yeah.
it's like minuscule. And so, like,
Right.
anything at an early stage sucks to do, right? And
Yeah.
so, like, if they don't feel like really that invested, or the opportunity cost for them is not that great, then when push comes to shove, like, they're just not going to care as much. So I think there's
Right.
one, that's one aspect of it. And I think it was Bezos that most famously said this, but he was like, never outsource things that are core to your business, right? Like, so, you outsource all the non-core stuff eventually, but like anything that's true, like your secret sauce, if you will, like that is probably something you should probably never outsource anyways.
Yeah, especially in CPG, where like things are so easily like replicatable,
Yeah, the
like
barrier
if
to
you
entry
allow
is
it to be.
small, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So if you get maybe like you start outsourcing your just like maybe very like unique ingredient or a unique recipe for a drink or a food or anything like that. I mean, you think they won't, and maybe they might even sign something that say they won't. But I mean, people talk, they see things before you know it. I've heard the story way too many times. It's something you need to be cautious of. You can't outsource like you can't outsource your novel idea for somebody else to do without the correct like protections in
Yeah,
place. So I think
like
that's a good point too.
your secret sauce is CPG brand. Usually it's probably not like your shipping, right?
Yeah,
Like,
right, exactly. Yeah.
it's time
The
consuming, and
trucks
there's,
you use, like, yeah.
and like there's scale elsewhere, right? So like it's just
Yeah.
things like that. But like, especially at an early stage, like brand building, you probably shouldn't outsource early on. And also like your distribution, because having access to your customers is also another form of branding, but it's like kind of the lifeline of your business.
Right. No, for sure. And I just want to give you a quick opportunity as well, Eric. People listen to the podcast, they want to know where they can get Yate. They love you. They want to keep in touch. So just let people know where they can find your website, your socials, that get in touch with you if they want to speak to you. Let everybody know how to stay in touch with the brand and the company.
Yeah, so I'm always available. Feel free to reach out to me at any time. My email is at Eric, ERIC at drinkyate.com. You can also check us out on our website, drinkyate.com or ING. And then also where to find us, just check our store locator. We're available primarily in SoCal and in New York. And like we said, mostly in on-premise and off-premise accounts. So yeah, we're hoping to expand through other places in California and New York, hopefully within the next year or so.
Awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Eric. Thanks for coming on, and I wish you continued success.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It was fun. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, bye.